Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, June 24th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom. On today's edition, a Ramsey County politician files suit against the Boy Scouts of America and changing rhetoric on climate change. The Citizens Board of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency met for the last time yesterday after the legislature eliminated it, Elizabeth Dunbar reports.
The move by the legislature, which came without a public hearing, becomes official next week. Environmentalists, citizen activists, and a few DFL lawmakers held a news conference to express their anger over the change. Jim Riddle is a Citizens Board member.
When the board is eliminated, July 1st, it'll be a sad day for democracy, a sad day for citizen engagement, open government, and the environmental protection in Minnesota.
Some lawmakers say they will push to reinstate the board as soon as next year, and Governor Dayton has said he wants the board reinstated in 2017. It's also possible the governor could ask the board to continue hearing public testimony on pollution issues, even though its decision-making authority would be gone. Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Ramsey County Board Chairman Jim McDonough has filed a lawsuit against the Boy Scouts of America and a local affiliate more than 40 years after he says he was sexually abused by a scout leader. McDonough says he may not have come forward if not for a state law which allows adult victims of childhood abuse to sue in civil court. Brant Williams has the story.
With his wife sitting on his right and his lawyer on his left, Jim McDonough made public a very private part of his life.
For 4 years, I was sexually assaulted by my scoutmaster.
McDonough became a member of Troop 12 in St. Paul in 1967 when he was 12 years old. He says for the next 4 years, adult scout leader Leland Opalinski abused him dozens of times during scout-related meetings and camping trips in both Minnesota and Wisconsin. The lawsuit complaint filed in Ramsey County District Court doesn't provide details of the abuse. McDonough says he chose not to tell anyone at the time while it was happening.
That was my fault, it was my shame, and it defined me, right? So my response was to medicate that pain with a lot of drugs and alcohol.
McDonough says he started to receive counseling for drug and alcohol abuse in 1983, but didn't seriously think about taking any legal action until the legislature passed the Minnesota Child Victim Act.
Thank you to Governor Dayton for signing that act into law in May of 2013. A three-year window was created for me and other child victims to demand accountability.
Last year, the Boy Scouts of America settled a suit with a Minnesota man who says he was sexually abused by a different Twin Cities scoutmaster. It was a Boy Scouts' second settlement over sexual abuse allegations against Peter Steibel. A third civil suit in that case was filed in January. The Boy Scouts keep files on volunteers accused of misconduct in order to track them and keep them from participating in future scouting activities. Opalinski's file reveals that in 1971, then 30-year-old Opalinski was arrested and charged with sodomy and, quote, indecent liberties with minor children. Opalinski pleaded guilty to indecent liberties with a 14-year-old boy who wasn't McDonough and was sentenced to 7 years of probation. McDonough's attorney, Patrick Noaker, says the Boy Scouts removed Opalinski after his conviction, but didn't tell the parents of troop members. McDonough's suit makes several allegations against the local and national Boy Scout groups, including negligence, negligent supervision, and fraud. Noaker says there are dozens of other Boy Scout volunteers in Minnesota who are also included in the files, but the Boy Scouts have not provided their names.
Then those people are in our communities, and kids and parents don't know who they are, and kids and parents deserve to know who they are so they can protect their children from them.
The Northern Star Council oversees scouting in central Minnesota and part of Wisconsin. The council's website says the names of some of the volunteers barred from scouting are private to protect the identity of victims or of people wrongly accused. However, it states that the criminal files are public if charges are filed. Council spokesman Kent York declined to comment on McDonough's lawsuit. In a written statement, York wrote, quote, "Nothing is more important than the safety of our youth members, and we are profoundly saddened when anyone uses their position to harm any child." The Boy Scouts of America, based in Irving, Texas, has not yet responded to a request for comment. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News.
About 1,000 mine workers on the Iron Range have been laid off in the past few months. That's about one out of every five taconite workers in a region where mining makes up about a third of the economy. But even as officials contend with the current downturn, many worry about a longer-term question with even larger economic consequences. Is Minnesota producing the right kind of iron ore product for a changing steel industry? Dan Crocker has a deeper look.
For over a century, iron ore mined from Minnesota's Iron Range has fed enormous blast furnaces at steel mills around the Great Lakes, in old Rust Belt cities like Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, and Hamilton, Ontario. That steel has helped manufacture everything from toy wagons to pickup trucks. But two trends in the steel industry have Iron Range watchers feeling uneasy. First, those blast furnaces that Minnesota taconite pellets feed, they're disappearing, says Brian Heady with the Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation Board.
When you look at the stats since, I think, about 2006, there were about 28 blast furnaces in the United States. And over the last 10 years, you've seen that number reduced by 7.
Steel companies are instead building electric arc furnaces. These mini-mills, as they're also called, use scrap metal or a more pure form of iron than taconite pellets.
That's kind of the bogey that's out there. The growing part of the market is the electric furnace market, which stands somewhere near around 60% of the steel produced in the United States. So you've got to be looking to where your customer's going and make sure you provide a product that they can use.
That's the number one worry of mining industry watchers in northern Minnesota. Here's number two.
Introducing the all-new Ford F-150. The first and only pickup with a high-strength, military-grade aluminum alloy body.
Don Fosnock with the Natural Resources Research Institute at the University of Minnesota Duluth estimates that building Ford's flagship pickup out of aluminum displaces about 500,000 tons of iron ore pellets a year.
If other trucks go that way because of the highway fuel economy standards, you could displace another 1.8 million tons very easily in model year 2018-19.
As the market for steel changes, Fosnock says Minnesota's mining industry needs to change with it. The solution, he and others say, is to produce a new kind of iron that can be used in electric arc furnaces. The product most are looking toward is something called direct reduced iron, or DRI. It's a purer form of iron than lower-grade taconite pellets that can be used directly in electric arc furnaces, but it requires more processing. Cliffs Natural Resources recently completed a pilot project at its North Shore mining plant in Silver Bay, where it successfully produced 30,000 tons of specialized pellets that can be used to make DRI. Those pellets would still have to be sent to a separate plant to make the direct reduced iron before it's shipped to steel mills. Cliffs has been mum on details, but on a call with investors this spring, CEO Lorenzo Goncalves said the company is also exploring building the state's first DRI plant.
We are working very closely with the state of Minnesota to put in place the first DRI facility in the state of Minnesota to supply the Midwest mini mills with DR pellets.
SR Steel, which is building a new mine and pellet plant on the range, also has long-term plans to make special DRI pellets and build a direct reduced iron plant on site, and possibly an electric arc furnace. Actually, making steel or a richer form of iron directly on the range has long been seen as the holy grail for economic development in the region. But College of St. Scholastica economist Tony Barrett says it's a goal the range has struggled to achieve.
It's moved very, very slowly, slower than I would have thought, so there must be some question about profitability.
A factor that may eventually change the economics this time is access to cheap energy. A lot of natural gas is required to turn low-grade iron ore into direct reduced iron, and Minnesota, in addition to having North America's largest deposits of iron ore, is very near to new supplies of gas in North Dakota and Canada. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
When the Minnesota House debated an energy bill earlier this year, Democrats offered an amendment that would have put the legislature on record, saying climate change is real and caused by human activity. The amendment failed, but the debate revealed a national trend among Republicans playing out in Minnesota. As public opinion on climate change shifts, the way Republicans are talking about climate change is shifting too. Catherine Richard has more.
This is Republican Representative Glenn Grunhagen on the Minnesota House floor in 2013 talking about climate change.
There's more and more evidence coming in that it's just a complete United Nations fraud and lie. The latest facts show that in the last 16 years, there's been no global warming.
And here's Grunhagen's response earlier this year to DFL House Minority Leader Paul Thiessen during a debate over an amendment to the energy bill. Thiessen asked Grunhagen if he believed climate change is caused by people.
Representative Thiessen, I believe there's eminently qualified scientists who would disagree with that comment, and I tend to agree with those scientists.
Like most House Republicans, Grunhagen, who is from Glencoe, voted against the amendment. Republicans said it was a political ploy by the DFL, and its failure had no bearing on the fact that Governor Mark Dayton ultimately signed the energy bill into law. But if you think it sounds like Gruenhagen has changed the way he talks about climate change, you're not imagining things. In Minnesota and around the nation, some Republicans are softening their rhetoric about the science behind the issue. Instead of stating their own disbelief in human-caused climate change, they cite a small minority of scientists who remain skeptical. Mike McKenna is a Republican consultant. He's noticed the trend and says the line helps politicos appeal to a variety of voters.
A slice from the center to the right of elected officials who are looking to hedge their bets a little bit.
Some recent surveys show most Americans think climate change is happening and that something should be done about it. At least one poll conducted by the New York Times, Stanford University, and the nonpartisan Resources for the Future show half of Republicans want the government to address climate change, and almost half of Republicans would vote for a candidate who supports action. McKenna said he doesn't believe polls like that are the reason some Republicans are using different language, but here's U.S. Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky last year echoing the type of statements Republicans are making.
In the 70s, we were concerned that the Ice Age was coming. I'm not a scientist. I am interested in protecting Kentucky's economy.
McConnell was in a tough race in 2014, and he was responding to a question about whether he thinks climate change is real. His state of Kentucky is a major coal producer. Stanford political science professor John Krosnick said the "I'm not a scientist" line doesn't get politicians far. In the New York Times poll, Krosnick measured how various climate change talking points play with voters.
The "I am not a scientist" statement also was a turnoff. There was nothing gained by the "I am not a scientist" statement.
Political consultant Mike McKenna called the talking point
arguably the dumbest talking point in the history of mankind.
That's because legislators with no scientific background vote on science policy all of the time.
To say that I'm not a scientist is essentially to disqualify yourself from the conversation right away. You know, in a democracy, you don't have to be an expert to have a thought, an opinion, to have a belief about things.
For his part, Representative Glenn Gruenhagen said his views on climate change remain the same, but that he does support some regulations to protect water and the environment. And as for his brief comments during floor debate, Gruenhagen said he didn't want to distract legislators from their main job of passing the Energy and Jobs Bill. Catherine Richert, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.